The Athletic.
Rachel Daly is hanging up her England boots.
Some breaking news from them this morning. One of the key members of their Euros winning squad of 2022, Rachel Daly, has retired from international duty. She won the last...
A Euros winner and a World Cup finalist with 84 caps and 16 goals.
James sends it in towards Daly again. Oh! At the double for Rachel Daly.
So who's England's replacement striker or even left back? And how did England navigate this transition period? I'm Sophie Penny, and from The Athletic, this is Full Time Europe. Eid Mubarak to all our Muslim listeners. Later, we'll be talking about Mark Skinner being offered a new contract by Manchester United.
Some players really like him, from what I've heard. Other players and his management of them and clarity of whether they're starting or not, or where they fit into the team or their progression, lacks clarity.
We've got the woman who broke that story with us, The Athletic's women's football reporter, Charlotte Harper. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello, Sophie.
And it's The Athletic's senior reporter, Michael Cox. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Sophie.
There's so much breaking news right now. We'll start with Rachel Daly, who's announced she's retiring from international football. She'll still be playing club football for Aston Villa. Charlotte, what was your initial reaction to this?
Quite shocked about the timing, slightly weird timing, but it makes sense in the fact that she will be 33 by the time the next Euros comes round, 35 potentially for the next World Cup, and she's retiring on her terms.
Michael, what did you make of that timing?
Very surprised, and I think we should be honest and say I think it's a reaction to her basically deciding she's not getting many chances for England. And I can understand her perspective, because when England won the Euros, she did a very good job for England at left back. She has always, or pretty much always, played up front at club level. After that, she came back to the WSL. She's been banging in the goals. We expected Alessia Russo to step up. You know, she was the one who always came on for Ellen White at the Euros. We expected her to step up and, I think, become more prolific in the WSL. That hasn't really happened. And Daly's had some opportunities. I remember in the Arnold Clarke Cup last year, she played very well in the game against Italy, I think it was. But I think it's clear that Wiegmann prefers Russo, probably for her all-round game, her link-up play. I think she's better at bringing teammates into it. But I think from Daly's perspective, she's probably really annoyed that she hasn't got a chance with Russo not quite as prolific as I would have expected by now. And she's probably a little bit fed up of being a backup and only getting 10, 15 minutes here or there. So I think it's a great shame for England. I don't think they're blessed with too many centre-forward options. If Russo, you know, was to get injured and miss the tournament next summer, I'm not quite sure who would play instead of her. And of course, she's so versatile and can do a job pretty much anywhere on the pitch. So, yeah, I respect that she's going out on her terms, as Charlotte said, but I hope she doesn't regret it.
Charlotte, what do you make of that idea that she's just not getting used as much as she would like in the position that she prefers and she'd rather focus on club football?
It was quite interesting last year when we were asking all the time, do you prefer left back? Or, you know, you really want to be centre forward, don't you? And I remember Amy Rijkaard from Goal said that. She's like, come on, you do want to be centre forward. And she said, Rachel Daly said, I'm not bothered. You guys care about where I play more than I do. But I think deep down, you want to be centre forward. And seeing her in that position, she won the Golden Boot for Aston Villa. That's where she thrives. So as Michael said, it's a reaction to the fact that she's not getting game time in her preferred position and she doesn't really want to spend 80 minutes on the bench.
We've had a lot of reaction from listeners. Listener Robin said we need to thank her for everything she's done to help the Lionesses to be the successful side they are now. And listener Nag says, absolute legend and deserves huge respect because she's the only nine who played left back regularly for England and didn't moan. So referencing what we've been talking about there. In terms of standout moments for Rachel Daly, what should people be Googling if they want to pick out and relive some of her glory moments for England?
To be honest, the thing that comes to mind for me was actually not something that really happened on the pitch, but it was after England beat Macedonia 2 or 3 years ago. And I think it was Leah Williamson was presented with the Player of the Match Award But Rachel Daly played in that game just after her father had died, I think, and the players all decided that actually the Player of the Match award should go to her. And that was quite a nice moment, I thought. Good example of the togetherness in the England side and a good example of Williamson's leadership as well. She was clearly very popular, very respected in the team. I would say, unless I'm really missing something, I can't really remember having a massive standout moment for England, which I think kind of summarises what her role was. She was happy to do a job everywhere. I mean, she played left back in the Euros. She played a little bit centre forward in the World Cup. In World Cup 2019, in the semi-final against the USA, she was fielded on the right of midfield in an attempt to shut down the US's left flank. So she could do a job anywhere, but maybe Charlotte can correct me. I don't remember a massive moment for her in either of the two tournaments, which is a bit of a shame because she's clearly such a very good player.
I agree, Michael. In terms of if you're a striker, there's not an epic Daly goal that comes to mind for England. What I remember is some of those sliding challenges at left back, but also how teams like Spain exploited her at left back. And that was always the question during the Euros. I mean, to get 22 goals, equaling Miedema's record, beating Bunny Shaw and Sam Kerr last year was pretty impressive off the back of a Euros campaign where you've played left back. I don't think anyone predicted that to win the WSL Golden Boot. And she was she's so athletic. And I hope we see that continuing with her club career. Like, great swivel. She won the Goal of the Month award in November for a left-footed strike against West Ham, which really showed her quality.
And it's Corsi. And Daly's there! Absolutely astonishing!
Likewise, off the pitch, I'll always remember one of the best days of my life. Yeah, I'll say of my life. Was the Trafalgar Square parade after England won on that Monday morning. I was slightly hungover, slightly sleep deprived. But Rachel Daly singing River Deep, Mountain High, as if she was doing the best. X Factor is not good enough. Like, the best concert of her life, having just such a great time. And just on that Sunday evening when they won the Euros, I remember speaking to her about Chloe Kelly. She had a chicken wrap in her hand and just having the time of her life saying, "We've won the Euros." Iconic, amazing. And she's full of fun. And I think also her friendship with Millie Bright, she will have provided England fans a lot of good memories.
I was thinking it was a shame that she couldn't play her last England game alongside Millie Bright, who's out with injury, but they've had many a good moment to make up for that. I wonder how England move forward from this. Michael, you touched on it a bit before. Who would be the second choice number nine to come on after Russo? That seems to be the glaring question. And also left back as well. I mean, that's still a position that's up for debate in the England team, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think centre forward probably the main factor, because I think Neve Charles has improved a lot. Alex Greenwood might shift back out to left back when Williamson and Bright are fit. Jess Carter can play there as well. But I mean, up front, yeah, if you take Russo out of the equation, I mean, and you want a proper centre forward, then you're probably looking to Bethany England, who's been in and out of the squad, more out than in, since the Euros victory. I mean, she's turning 30 this year, so it's not like England are looking to youth. No, I think it leaves England with a massive gap. And she's a different type of player to Russo. Russo's good at attacking crosses. We saw that with the goal against Sweden. But I think Daly's a better player in the air. I think she's a better penalty box striker. And I think, I mean, kind of going back to what we discussed before, but I think this will come as quite a big shock to Serena Wiegmann, I expect. And I actually think maybe we have to ask questions of whether she's done enough to keep Daly happy, because Daly's a really good player. Charlotte says she won the WSL Golden Boot. We know that players who are not playing get frustrated. And I think there's a certain age range where if you get called up to England, you're kind of serving your apprenticeship, biding your time, waiting for the breakthrough. But for England to lose a really, really good player, prolific striker, I would guess because she's just not playing enough. She made, was it five changes for the game against Ireland, but didn't change the centre forward. And maybe that has come as a really big blow to Rachel Daly. So yeah, in terms of the number nine position, don't think there's many options. And I think she'll be a massive miss.
I think that is a really interesting point about kind of Serena Wiegmann's role in keeping players like that happy. As you say, WSL top scorer, and now she's not going to be playing for England, so it could be a big loss. They'll also miss her versatility as well, won't they? She was, whenever we were trying to pick a squad for all the tournaments, you were always thinking, well, Rachel Daly's a shoe-in because she can play that left back and she can play that striker role. So I wonder who's going to fill in that versatility. And it is an important question to ask about Serena Wiegmann's management. Charlotte, do you have anything else to add on that management side?
Yeah, I just wonder if she has taken Rachel Daly a bit for granted. And we've seen Alex Greenwood, Lotta Wubben-Moy being very patient, didn't feature at all, well, heavily in the Euros. Alex Greenwood came on as a sub, and they have bided their time, whereas Rachel Daly said, you know, I'm not here to stick around. I wonder if this opens the door for people like Ebony Salmon, who was recently, well, not recently, but has been called up in previous camps, Aggie Beaver-Jones at Chelsea, or whether we'll have a complete shuffle and then put Lauren Hemp as a number nine. But Lauren Hemp is an out-and-out winger. She's best driving at players on her strongest foot on the left wing. So another conundrum for Wiegmann.
Maybe I have to play Millie Bright up front from the start of matches now.
Not sure Rachel Daly, her best friend, would be very happy about that, Millie Bright taking her position.
Surely she'd give her blessing. Rachel Daly would love to see that.
It would make for an entertaining watch, that's for sure. I mean, they found replacements at the back. This does all link into the wider story of kind of where England are at right now, how they're navigating this new phase without the Olympics this summer. More on that next.
You're listening to Full Time Europe from The Athletic.
Sophie Penny, Michael Cox and Charlotte Harper here with you on Full Time Europe, available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. So it was a 1-1 draw with Sweden and a 2-0 win over the Republic of Ireland for the European champions England to get their Euro 2025 qualification underway.
Russo waiting for the cross. And in it goes. It might reach bronze at the back post. It does. And James is there. And James scores for England. And they lead in Ireland.
They're second in the group behind France, where the top two teams qualify automatically and the bottom two will play in a playoff. Charlotte, I want to get your overall thoughts on how England performed over those two games.
It was okay. It wasn't scintillating, but it wasn't awful. So, yeah, bang in the middle average. Sweden didn't keep the ball well enough, lacked any kind of fluidity. They invited pressure. It seemed a bit disjointed. Ireland was better in the first half, but again, allowed them back into the game in the second half.
The thing is, Michael, okay is not really what we expect from the World Cup finalists and the European champions. It just seems like since the World Cup final, England's performances have taken a bit of a turn. Before the World Cup final, England lost just once in 38 games. And in the past 10 matches, they've won 6, drawn 1 and lost 3. In your article on The Athletic, you point out that a lack of clean sheets or defensive solidity may be an issue. In 2002, they got 4 clean sheets out of 6 matches. They're now on a run of 2 clean sheets in the past 12 matches. Obviously, they got a clean sheet against Ireland, but defensively, they sort of lost it towards the end of the game. Do you think defence and clean sheets is something that we can sort of pinpoint as a way of England getting out of what can only be described, and as Charlotte describes in her piece, as a bit of a rut, really?
Yeah, I mean, the mitigating circumstances is that Millie Bright's out injured and Leah Williamson has been out injured. So there's been a lot of chopping and changing. Some of that, to be fair, has been slightly self-inflicted because there was a change of system at the World Cup to 3 at the back. There was a couple of different situations with where Jess Carter and Alex Greenwood were being used. At times, one was left back, one was centre back. At times, the other way around. And I actually think Alex Greenwood probably been England's best player from the World Cup onwards. I think she's been fantastic. But yeah, they are conceding too many goals, or rather, I'd put it, not keeping enough clean sheets, because they're not conceding 3s and 4s, but they aren't keeping clean sheets. And I agree with Charlotte. It's not it's not just about the defence. I think a major factor has been not keeping the ball well enough. I think that was particularly an issue against Sweden in the second half. I think there's maybe an argument they need to just play slightly differently at times, have Georgia Stanway just sitting deeper alongside Kira Walsh, just retaining the ball for longer periods. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with Charlotte. It's not, England aren't playing badly, but there was a feeling, I think, going into the World Cup last year, England just seems not unstoppable, but there was just such positive vibes pretty much all over the place on the pitch. You know, the mood in the camp, there was just a real kind of quite a special feeling, I think, for the players involved. And there's just signs now that things are just not quite as they should be. On the pitch, I don't think they've played well for quite a long time. And I do think the Daly thing is probably the first blow we've had off the pitch, unless I'm really missing anything. I can't think of many examples of any dissent towards Wiegemann in terms of her tactics, in terms of her player management. So it's a bit of a difficult period for England to get through. I mean, it's over a year until the next tournament they're involved in, and you don't lose a European Championship in the first and second qualification games, especially when you get 4 points from them. But yeah, I think for the first time under Wiegemann, the mood does feel slightly low.
One of the factors in this that Jessie Parker-Humphreys has pointed out in their article on The Athletic is Lucy Bronze and her defensive work. Charlotte, I'll get your thoughts on this first and then we'll come to Michael. What have you made of that part of England's tactics? It seems like there's kind of not really much competition for that position, but the goal that England conceded against Sweden, Bronze wasn't really marking Fridolina Rolfö tightly enough on the far post, and that led to the goal, didn't it?
It did. I think Lucy Bronze is a brilliant character for the team, a great leader. There was a clip done by the BBC that said, you know, if Serena Wiegemann was down with a cold, who would be the manager to step in? And it was Serena Wiegemann said Lucy Bronze straight away because she has that direction. But on the pitch, we've seen her exposed in the World Cup final against Spain. That led to Spain's goal. Again, not checking her shoulder against Fridolina Rolfö. And I think previously where teams have targeted Rachel Daly at left back as a weakness, teams are now targeting right back Lucy Bronze as a weakness because of those kind of buccaneering runs that she's been known for, but she leaves so much space behind her and other centre-backs or defensive midfielders have to cover for her. Now, if you were Wiegemann, surely you would say, be more conservative, don't push up so much, we need to protect that space. But that's not necessarily being reflected on the pitch because Lucy Bronze continues to do that. And, you know, she scored what seemed to be the winning qualification goal for the Olympics against Scotland by bombing up the pitch, only for the Netherlands to nick one. So is Lucy Bronze's era coming to an end? She's definitely not as good as she was when, you know, Phil Neville was praising her as the world's best player. The question is who will replace her. England don't have enough depth in that area. Neve Charles could shuffle along there. Jess Carter could play right back there. Esme Morgan could play right back there. Letitia, who wasn't in the squad, she can play there. But Lucy Bronze is normally a dead-on cert to start right back. There is never, rarely any rotation unless for your resting Bronze.
Michael, the odd thing about this is that we're talking about this and quite a few fans are, but it doesn't seem like Serena Wiegemann is showing any signs of actually kind of changing this. I'm sure that she's thinking about it, but she hasn't really shown much evidence of it in her lineups.
No, she starts pretty much every game. And I actually think that the concession against Sweden, in isolation, I think it was a pretty minor mistake. I think it was a really good cross, good run to play at the far post. But it is a bit of a pattern. I mean, England conceded a kind of similar goal in that semi-final of the World Cup to the US in 2019, where Bronze didn't defend the far post well. And the funny thing is, I mean, she's very good in the air. She's a target for quite a lot of England's corners. Both the goals in the game against Ireland came from long balls towards the back post, one of which she won, the other she didn't quite get the header in, and it led to the penalty. But she just doesn't seem very alert defensively and able to use her aerial ability when this cross is from the left back zone. So it's quite an odd situation. Again, I don't think England have that many options in that position. I know Charlotte's just listed them. To me, they all seem like centre backs played out of position rather than natural right backs. I mean, Rachel Daly would have been an option. She is someone who can play fullback and she's right footed and has played at right back before, albeit not her favourite position. So yeah, it's a bit of a conundrum. I just think with her reputation and her experience, the fact that she's playing for Barcelona, the fact that she plays or she has played alongside Millie Bright for England for 5 or 6 years, I'd be really surprised if she wasn't in the starting 11 come the Euros. But it is clearly a bit of a problem that England need to address.
Surely this should be a period of time that England are using to sort of rebuild. They don't have a major tournament until summer of 2025. But Charlotte, you've written about this on your article in The Athletic about whether this is really a rebuilding phase for England. You know, is this a kind of new young team that Serena Wiegmann is testing out so that she can have a future for this England squad? Or is it actually, you know, not that much younger than the Euro squad or the World Cup squad? I mean, lots of these players have been to two major tournaments already. I'm just not really not sure where they're at and how she's using this period of time.
The best thing about sitting next to Michael Cox at Wembley is that he just gives you all these little snippets. It's like, only four of England's outfield players starting tonight have started at the Euros. Oh, that's interesting, Michael. And it felt, we were chatting about this, like, if you think about that, then there's six new players from the Euro starters on the pitch. And it feels on paper, then that must be a huge amount of change. But it doesn't feel that way at all. That's mainly because Wiegmann has kept her structure and the shape. And then you kind of just tinker little bits here and there, which I think is a very sensible option. There's no point in drastic changes and ripping it all up because you want to maintain some of those connections. But with new players coming in, you have to establish those connections a bit more. So Wiegmann is keeping her core, keeping people like Earps, Greenwood, Walsh, Hemp, even, you know, Russo, who's nominally number nine, and adding the likes of Grace Clinton, Jess Park, even Lauren James, who wasn't at the Euros. And I still don't think Wiegmann has figured out where exactly she wants to play James. She's wasted on the wing, in my opinion, and should be given more of a free roaming role in the number 10. So I still have faith that kind of Wiegmann knows what she's doing, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are still more changes to come Euro 2025.
Yeah, Michael, what do you make of the phase that we're in now and how Serena is handling it, especially with Rachel Daly now retiring and obviously the need to try more players in her positions as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think she is rebuilding. I don't think the age thing is a factor at all. I must admit, before the Euros, I wrote an article saying that England are probably a bit too young to win the Euros when you look at the age of previous winners. Obviously, that didn't turn out to be correct. You know, 26.4 was the average age. That's pretty young for a team winning a major tournament. Ellen White moved on. Jill Scott wasn't in the starting 11, but she moved on. And they brought through young players. Jess Park has come into the equation. Lauren James wasn't even in the squad 2 years ago, which feels mad. Grace Clinton started against Sweden. So I think the evolution has happened. It feels to me like Wiegmann's almost banking on some of these players who have improved over the last year continuing to improve again. I mean, I must admit, a year ago, I wasn't that convinced by Lotta Webber-Moore. I thought she was good on the ball, but made some errors, including in that semi-final against Wolfsburg about this time last year. Grace Clinton, you know, was not starting regularly in the WSL at that time. They've had very good seasons. And I think Wiegmann is just hoping and expecting that with another 25 games going into the Euros next year, they will be top-class players. But yeah, there's... It's certainly a bit of an in-between phase for me at the moment. I don't think England have been impressive, but I don't think you can levy an accusation at Wiegmann that she's just trying the same players in the same system as at the Euros or at the World Cup because, yeah, it has moved on quite a lot.
I don't want to take anything away from the success that England had at the Euros and at the World Cup, but we do have to remember that from the knockout stages onwards at the Euros and in the World Cup, possibly bar the China game, England really had to grind out those results. And I wonder if we're perhaps unreasonably expecting outstanding performances every time when the way they've performed before has sometimes been just about grinding out those results.
I remember in the Euros, it was kind of euphoria, like 8-0 Norway, battering them, 4-0 Sweden. But if you look back at, especially from the quarterfinal stage onwards, a very, very tight game against Spain, who were leading. Sweden, yes, England beat them 4-0, but Sweden had their chances. If you look back, there were plenty that they didn't put away. And again, against Germany, it was such a game of fine margins. And Leah Williamson said something interesting at the pre-match press conference before Ireland that, you know, the 2021-2022 season, things really went our way. We played such high level. It felt like everything we touched was golden. And so it's just, you know, you're holding a yardstick against England and these Euros performances, and it's almost as if we can't get away from that. And I just wonder if caught up in the kind of the first major trophy, and obviously it was a brilliant success and they deserve all the recognition that they got. But don't forget that those games were still very tight and Spain have now kicked on since then.
And some potentially tight games coming up as well in their Euro 2025 qualification campaign. There's a doubleheader against France coming up at the end of May and beginning of June, which now looks crucial because France beat Sweden and Ireland 1-0. It's back to club football now for the players, and that's where we're heading.
You're listening to Full Time Europe with Sophie Penny.
Sophie Penny, Michael Cox and Charlotte Harper here with you on Full Time Europe. So Charlotte, you just broke the story that Manchester United have offered manager Mark Skinner a new contract. What more can you tell us?
Yes, so an offer has been made. Terms have not yet been agreed, but discussions are ongoing. From my understanding, there is a reasonable level of optimism that a deal will be agreed. And part of those discussions are around contract length as well.
And how involved were Ineos, the company that bought a minority stake in the club, in this decision, do we know? Because obviously it's part of kind of a wider rebuild of Manchester United, isn't it?
Yeah, so Ineos have been in the building since February. So any decision is an Ineos decision because they are in charge of football operations. Of course, they will, you know, lean on the current football leadership. That will change in the future with Dan Ashworth hoping to come in as sporting director.
Do we think that this is a smart decision to stick with Mark Skinner? Obviously, we've spoken on previous podcasts about kind of the difficulties behind the scenes at Manchester United. I would really point people to go and listen to those and also read Charlotte's in-depth report on kind of what's going on behind the scenes at United. But in terms of what we're seeing on the pitch and what he's been able to produce in that environment, do we think sticking with Skinner is the right choice?
Yeah, I think he's done an okay job. I mean, we have to remember they haven't been in the WSL for very long. I think they've got a good core of mainly English players who start pretty much every week, kind of Earps, Letizia, Blundell, Turner, Zellum, Toon and Paris, you can pretty much guarantee will be in the starting 11. I think part of the issue is I don't think the signings have been great. And that comes back to, you know, talking about director of football and the recruitment. I don't mean to pick on her, but I thought that the signing of Miyazawa was a really strange one. I know she had a good World Cup. I think I saw all of Japan's games. I don't think she was one of their better players. I think she just happened to be in the right place at the right time to finish off moves. And when you look at her goal scoring record from Japan, she just doesn't produce those kind of numbers consistently. And it just, to me, it felt like a kind of the thing teams used to do 30 years ago before they had access to stats and Y Scout and stuff. Oh, here's the top goal scorer at the World Cup. Let's just sign her. But, you know, it's a 5-game sample size against some relatively weak opponents. It's not always going to work out well for you. So I think he's done a decent job, Mark Skinner. And considering there's likely to be change in the dugout on the men's side, I wonder whether they just want a bit of continuity. They maybe don't want to make a big drastic decision first few weeks coming through the door. Just keep things as they are for now. So, yeah, I mean, I know he's been under pressure from some of the supporters who support Manchester United are accustomed to, you know, wanting them to do much better than how they've done so far. But like I say, they haven't been in the WSL for that long. They have made the top three into the top four. I think that's quite clear. So I'm not too surprised that he'll be in his job next year.
Charlotte, what do you make of this all? Obviously, you're seeing it very much in the context of having a good knowledge of everything that's going on behind the scenes. Do you think it's a good idea to keep Skinner as a constant throughout all this change?
Well, from the club perspective, they feel he has done enough to earn an extension. And again, it comes down to priorities, that the men's team is the priority. The women's team, they feel, as Michael said, has established themselves as a top four side. It is interesting, though, some new owners, and we know Ineos are taking charge of the football operations, would just kind of want to start from scratch, rip it up and get their own new head coach in. So from that perspective, that suggests that they don't want to upset the apple cart too much. Let's look, let's observe, let's listen, see how Skinner does, if he does agree to this deal next season, and then perhaps reevaluate.
I think it's interesting, a lot of fans I've seen kind of complaining about Mark Skinner in that he often sticks with the same starting lineup. And then I've heard some concerns about kind of, well, where does that leave players in terms of recruitment? If you think, oh, I'm going to come into Manchester United, do you think, am I actually going to be part of that starting lineup? And if I'm not part of that starting lineup, am I going to see much game time? Charlotte, do you think that's a legitimate concern, or do you think actually to do with signings, it's just a wider question about the organisation?
I think the signings is about having a recruitment team dedicated to the women's team and having scouts, which, like most WSL clubs, Manchester United don't have dedicated women's team scouts. Chelsea do, Arsenal do. And that's a whole operation to be ahead of the curve, to know which gaps you want to plug and to recruit players for specific reasons that you know that are going to add value to your team. I don't think Mark Skinner can be solely criticised for the recruitment because he's the manager. And yes, he will have a say in it, but he's not there looking through footage every night of the week. That's not his primary role. As for picking the same starting 11, yes, he has those players who he trusts and that he likes, and that consistent squad despite form, and some players really like him from what I've heard. Other players and his management of them and clarity of whether they're starting or not, or where they fit into the team or their progression, or just a kind of sense of my role, lacks clarity. So a mixed bag of opinions.
I'm sure our listeners have a mixed bag of opinions too. They can let us know on fte@theathletic.com via email or at The Athletic FC on socials. Charlotte and The Athletic team will keep you up to date on whether Mark Skinner does sign that contract that he's been offered and all the details of it. So head to The Athletic to find out more. To sign up, it's just $1.99 a month for 12 months. You can go to theathletic.com/WSL. Thank you so much for joining us, Charlotte and Michael.
Thanks.
Thanks, Sophie.
Before you go, make sure you rate and review the podcast and hit follow wherever you get your podcasts. This has been Full Time Europe, available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. Eid Mubarak. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Full Time Europe, part of The Athletic Football Podcast Network. The producer was Sophie Penny and the executive producer was Abby Patterson. To discover and listen to other great Athletic podcasts just like this one, including our brand new daily football briefing, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand.
The Athletic.